Welcome into another edition of the Dan Ed Victory Podcast, only available on musketeerreport.com. I am Rick. He is Dan. Dan, Xavier just went 0-3. How do you feel?
Well, today Xavier did not lose, which makes today pretty above average for last week, I'd say.
Well, there you go. We are recording this on Tuesday night following Xavier's 72-67 home loss to Creighton yesterday afternoon. Of course, they lost to Butler 83-78 on Saturday, and they lost to Villanova last Tuesday 79-54. Dan, tell me where you want to start here in terms of, I think we want to sort of start overall, big picture. Where do you want to go with this initially?
I mean, obviously, the whole thing is, it was a disappointing week. There's just no two ways about it. And the question is this the beginning? I guess the bigger picture question is, and it's not something we can answer right now, is this a sort of school of hard knocks learning experience that will, that in 6 weeks or so, you'll see a tougher, more poised team that's used to playing in close games that maybe has a little bit more scar tissue, a little bit more ability to put to handle those situations, and maybe is a little tougher down the stretch? Or is this the beginning of a kind of a roller coaster ride that may end up with Xavier on the NCAA tournament bubble? And I got to say, I mean, I it can go both ways. And it's tough for me to believe that it'll go the latter way. But, I mean, you can't discount it as at least a possibility at this point. I don't know. I mean, I guess the frustrating thing. So you start with the frustration of the Creighton game because, I mean, Creighton loses Mo Watson to what has been confirmed as a season-ending ACL injury, which is terrible. But they lose him. He only plays 9 minutes. And really the last minute of that, he could barely move. So Xavier pretty much had 28, 29 minutes with Creighton's, the linchpin of their offense off the court. Creighton having to cobble together and jerry rig an offense, sort of on an ad hoc basis. A period of time also where, Creighton struggled with severe foul trouble to a lot of their major players. Cole Huff, Hagner was in foul trouble, Patton was in foul trouble. So they were having to shuttle in different guys. They had guys coming off the bench that really hadn't played much role this season. And so all these things kind of were working in Xavier's favor. Plus, Xavier did a really nice job defensively. I thought even with Watson in the game early on, I think they had a good defensive game plan. I think if you wanted to pick nits, you could say Creighton missed a lot of open threes. You could also say that Creighton got a lot of really good looks close to the basket, especially early in the game. But ultimately, if you hold that team to 72 points, and regardless of their personnel, you've done a pretty good job. But Xavier still can win. I mean, and that is kind of an ominous sign, I have to say, because Creighton, I don't know. I guess this is when I think about it from a historical perspective, Rick, you think about some of the games we've seen where Xavier has lost their key player, you know, in the run of play and what's happened in those games. And you think back to that game where the game at Atlantis against Iowa, where Iowa was like, you know, top 10 in the country, where Xavier had them just demolished down like 15 or 16 points with 8 minutes left. Samaje had the first of that sort of the cramping issues that he had that season, and Xavier lost again. They just fell to pieces. You think about the shootout that year when Xavier lost Samaje and D in similar fashion. They couldn't get anything done. You think about the VCU game that year where D Davis went out. You think about last year with Sumner against Nova. And in all those cases, you saw teams just kind of fall apart and the other team able to take advantage. And man, you would have thought, and I guess it's a testament to Creighton to a certain extent, but you would have thought Xavier could have won that game. And instead of taking advantage of that and building a lead, the same mistakes, the same lack of execution, the same missed open shots, the same inability to complete possessions just came back to haunt them. And, I mean, that's about as frustrating a loss as I can remember in the last few years for Xavier, even more frustrating than something like the Wisconsin game last year, because it's tough to believe with all the breaks that went Xavier's way at different points in that game that they couldn't pull it out, especially in that circumstance, having lost two straight games prior. So I mean, it's tough to know how things are going to break from here. I don't want to be all doom and gloom. I'm not saying they're a terrible team. I'm not saying they're going to miss the tournament, but you talk about choppy waters in a season. They've hit them right now.
Yeah, no question. A lot to unpack there. Let's talk, I mean, in terms of it being like the most.
Yeah, I talked for like 5 straight minutes. So
no. I mean, and that's what I want. Obviously, I've had takes out there on all this stuff leading up to this. So I've talked a lot about Xavier's issues to this point and where I kind of think they're at. So I wanted to hear your opinion and get a fresh perspective on these things and kind of sense where you were gauging it. And in terms of like the frustrating thing, I would have to assume that's because of the circumstance, the fact that they had lost 2 straight, the fact that it felt like such a winnable game with such a big opportunity on the line because Creighton is a really good team and it would have been a big win. I mean, in terms of like bad losses, that one's not even in the top 20 within the last couple of years.
No.
Like, you know, I mean, like it's just not. The whole Mo
and
Watson
if,
going.
And if those,
go ahead, sorry.
If those 3 games had occurred over the course, if say like Xavier had played St. John's and beaten them at home between the Villanova and Butler games, or if they had played Georgetown and hypothetically beaten them at home between the Butler and Creighton games, I don't think it would feel quite as, it wouldn't be quite as disheartening as it was. But, you know, that's the way the schedule panned out.
Sure. In terms of the whole injury thing with Watson going down and that changing the dynamics of the game and all that stuff, I just don't play into any of that. Like, look, it can go either way. You can lose a guy and you can play terribly and your minds go elsewhere and everyone says, well, they were detached and they didn't care about the game anymore. Then you can see it go the other way where guys say they rally around their missing teammate. It galvanized them and they came back and played excellent in the second half or whatever and won a game for him. You know, like I've seen it both ways. I've heard the story both ways. That narrative's been out there on either side. To me, it's just like at that point you're in the game. You know what I mean? Like it's not, mm-hmm. You have to play whoever's out there and they play and whatever happens, happens. I just don't put a whole lot of stock into that either way. Now that completely changes Creighton team. It makes them much different, much less dynamic on offense. So I'm not saying that didn't affect Creighton. Don't misinterpret what I'm saying. I'm just saying like in terms of the mental aspect, like when you're comparing it to Xavier losing Samaje Christen, well, the difference is Samaje Christen was Xavier's whole team and Creighton is still a top 10 team. You know what I mean? Like they have other talented pieces and experienced players and guys that knew what the heck to do. Xavier had no one but Samaje Christen on those teams when he'd go down cramping late in a game and teams were pressing trying to get back in it. They couldn't get the ball across half court without him. Last year, you referenced the Edmund injury. Well, I mean, he went down posturing and left on a stretcher and went to hospital and wasn't on the sideline.
90 seconds of the game.
Right, wasn't on the sideline smacking the floor and cheering his teammates on from the sideline. So it's a little bit easier to not worry about your teammate when he's over there chest bumping you as you're coming off the court, despite the fact that he's a torn ACL, which is one of the more wild things I've seen, by the way. Like, he sprinted to midcourt and hip bumped one of his teammates coming off the floor in the second half yesterday. And he had a torn ACL. So that's kind of mind-boggling. In terms of the Creighton loss, I think it's really everything you said is right. It's one you really think they should have had. But at the end of the day, the issues they've been having, I don't think it matters. You know what I mean? Like, if you would have told me, hey, their best players still aren't going to play like their best players, then I would have told you, like, okay, well, then you can't really start factoring in, well, Creighton had different factors going against them, because this is about Xavier. It's not about Creighton right now. It's not about Butler. It's not about Villanova. Now, it is about them because they're really good teams, and Xavier's proven that despite their struggles, because they've been dealing with these struggles all year, they can beat average teams this year. Despite their best players being what they are. What they haven't proven is when they get in these big moments against big time teams that are giving them a run in the second half and they're down and they're not just more talented and a better, tougher team. Their best players aren't good enough. And to me, that's the biggest issue. Any other analytics, other analysis just doesn't matter because Trayvon Blewett, JP Makura, and Edmund Sumner aren't the three guys that everyone, including myself, national media, coaches, they themselves, everyone expected them to be this year.
Yeah, I mean, basically with those three guys, it's been kind of And I think part of it is that, you know, how long have you been doing this podcast? 4 years?
Yeah,
4.5 years, something
like
that?
Yeah.
That pretty much coincides with when those three guys started being recruited by Xavier. I mean, what I like Sumner, I think, committed on one of the first, like, full podcasts we did, right?
Right.
So, I mean, those guys are guys whose careers we followed very closely. And we've seen what they're capable of. But we've always seen what they're capable of, with the exception of Trayvon Blue when we were in high school. And, well, and JP and Edmund, too, I guess. But once they've gotten to college, all those guys have been, for the most part, I'm even going to say it with Trayvon, but they've never been the main guy. Because even though Trayvon was the best player on the team last year, the impetus seemed, the team seemed to run more through other guys. I don't know if that makes sense, but it always seemed like Trayvon was kind of the guy behind the guy in a lot of ways.
So are you saying like maybe Trayvon was like always the second best player, but Miles had a big game, or James had a big game, or someone else had the big game to help him?
I actually think that because the next question about Trayvon Blewett is somebody who's talking about, well, is Trayvon, you know, a flat track bully? Is he a guy that doesn't step up in big games? And, you know, the thing that was brought up was, well, look at the games he's been, you know, the KenPom most outstanding player, the best statistical player. And my thing is, well, okay, that's true that he's been the best player in a lot of games against bad teams. But if he's the second best player and Xavier beats somebody really good on the road, and Trayvon's ability opens up room, draws the best defender, and allows JP to score a lot of points, or allows the Miles to score a lot of points, I mean, he's having just as much of an impact on the game. Now, in terms of like thinking of signature moments where Trayvon hit big shots, win games for Xavier, I get it. I guess a little bit. I mean, the dude made two foul shots to beat UC at Shoemaker Center his freshman year. I mean, I don't know that I could ever say that he's unclutch, but I mean, I get the narrative that's being built there. But yeah, I mean, I think all three of those guys are being expected to step up and be alpha dogs this year. And we've seen glimpses of it here and there, but the mix, there's something about the mix that's off. Don't you feel that way? Like, you can point to the 3-point shooting. You can point to the foul shooting. You know, the foul shooting is a problem. It's not the problem, but it is a problem. But it just, the fluidity doesn't seem to be there. And I can't decide whether it's a kind of a chicken or an egg thing. Is Xavier not making shots and scoring lots of points because the fluidity isn't there, or do they not look fluid because they're not making shots?
Yeah, so I'd say
I don't know what the answer is.
No, that is the question, and it's something that we've been discussing throughout the year, and I was initially heavy on that. Look, they don't have any flow. They're not the same offense bandwagon early in the season, and I think that was the case. Starting around like the Eastern Washington game and then into Providence and then again at Georgetown and I think at home against St. John's especially, they scored 97 points in that game. I think we started seeing them play a little bit more like the team that they were last year in terms of sharing the ball and making some good passes. I think they've continued that through the last three games for the most part. There may be moments. And again, I think you get into the chicken or the egg thing, and I think it's more when they don't make shots and they do get their backs against the wall and they get into some trouble, there may be some moments where they become, you know, a little more individualistic. But for the most part,
they regress to bad habits.
At times.
I think.
But it's limited. It's limited, Dan. I've been going back through the video of the last three games. I was doing it today of the Villanova, and the Villanova game is what? I mean, they played terribly, obviously. They were just – the second half was – it's not even worth watching. But the Butler and Creighton games especially that they were in and they're fighting in, they're running a lot of good offense. Like, they're especially in the Creighton game, Chris Mack took over at the end of the Creighton game. He was outstanding in the final 3-4 minutes of that, where he was just running set after set, pushing the right buttons, knowing what matchup to attack, getting the right screen or whatever to get the exact – and look, I see people complaining, well, you shouldn't give that shot to Trayvon at the end of the game. I'm sorry. I totally disagree with that. And that's a matter of opinion. Like, I'm not going to say you're wrong. I get where you're coming from on that with the way he's been shooting. You can make that argument. But to me, he's still your guy. Like, he's still the guy you want taking that shot if you can get him the look, especially the looks they were getting him. And they were great look. Now, Edmund, the play was so weird where he just lost the ball. The play they drew up was unbelievable. Yeah. It was an incredible, like, little double screen action where Rashid Gaston just cleared out the left side for him as he crossed back over when Justin Patton switched to him. It was just a beautifully drawn up play. They executed perfectly,
I sit behind the basket. I sat behind the basket, and I was 100% sure he was going to go up and tomahawk dunk it.
Yeah, wide open.
And I was sort of thinking, okay, there's 14 seconds left. You know, can they get one stop to win the game at that point? And the ball just flies up in the air.
Yeah.
And then you get three tips at it.
Well, here's the thing about that. Even after that ball, he loses that ball. He has the wherewithal to grab it and stay with the play, not lose his head, not travel, make a perfect pass inside out to Trayvon Blewett for an in-rhythm three that he can't put down. Mm-hmm. And then they get three looks at it that they can't make to take the lead back. Then they foul. They go down by three. Chris Mack runs another great play, a little screen-to-screen action to get Trayvon an in-rhythm three in the corner, and he misses another one. I mean, like, it's – that's not bad offense. That's not – they're having flow-ish. You know what I mean? Like, that's – they cannot make shots, especially in big moments. You know, you have JP the other night, like, in the Creighton game, he's got the – he doesn't recognize the switch when they're switching everything with Kaiser in the game, gives up an open three to Hegner with 4 minutes left. It was a three-point game. That takes it to a six-point game. That's a backbreaking play. In the Butler game, he just, you know, couldn't put shots down. He had the two turnovers at the top of the key where he just became a complete robot.
Right.
And Kamar Baldwin was reading him the whole time and stole a telegraphed pass and took it the other way for easy twos that just killed Xavier in big moments. Like, he's been awful in big moments. And that's a guy that everyone, I think, his reputation at this point has been, that's the guy we want in big moments. He's the big moment guy, you know? Like, last year we were talking after the Villanova game, someone tweeted into the podcast asking us if JP was going to have to carry his balls around in a wheelbarrow the day after around campus. Like, so that's how we've talked about that guy to this point. So, like, I don't – you know what I mean? Like, don't tell me these guys aren't that and they can't be that and there's no upside for this team. Because last year you all loved these guys. You know, for those reasons. So there is some upside there. It's clearly an adjustment period going on. They're clearly struggling with that. And why they're missing shots, I don't know. I've seen that happen, though. Like, this isn't a new phenomenon in basketball. Sometimes a guy has a bad year or a bad slump for a while, a bad half a year or whatever. But to me, the thing I look at with this team, and we were texting about this earlier, the issues for this team are things we thought would be strengths coming into the year. We're talking about, like, IQ.
Yeah.
Perimeter skills. Making shots.
Turnovers.
Yeah, playing well offensively. That's what we worried about, right? To this point, this team's rebounded the heck out of the ball. They've been tough. They've been consistent on defense. They've talked well. They've been cohesive on that end. Like, they're farther along.
They get to the line more than anybody else in the league.
Yeah, this is a tough group. This is a tough group that plays with consistent effort for the most part. Now, Villanova and Butler, we saw that waver a little bit. Second half of the Butler game was not good at all defensively. But it was back in Creighton. Creighton, they played their asses off. It just wasn't good enough because they couldn't make shots. And so to me, I think when you look at their issues, these are theoretically fixable issues, even if I don't know what the solution is or how to get them back on track or why they can't make shots. Theoretically, there's upside, and these issues aren't – like, they don't have personnel issues where, well, they just can't match up with that team, or they just don't have a point guard, or they just don't have – you know what I mean? Like, they're good enough theoretically to match up with these teams and play with these teams, and we're seeing that. It's not like they're getting blown out by top 10 teams in the country. They're playing right with them, and they can't make big shots to win it.
Yeah, I mean, and kind of the thing is, it's getting to a point at this stage in the season. So Matt Norlander wrote a article, which I thought was a completely even-handed and reasonable article. I know Chris Mack kind of, in my opinion, described it in a little bit of a disingenuous way.
But he wasn't talking about that article, right? Chris referenced a tweet. Everyone was talking about the article Matt wrote, but he said a tweet, right?
Yeah. So it was probably just a misleading headline that was on the tweet.
Okay.
But I mean, the fact is, I mean, you look at Xavier's resume thus far, they've beaten two top 50 teams, according to KenPom, and those two teams are currently tied for last in the Atlantic Coast Conference at 1-4 in league play. And neither one of them really projects to do much of anything in league play. And unfortunately, and this is not, you know, this is no shot at Mario Mercurio and no shot at the schedule that Xavier put together, but a lot of the teams on this non-conference slate have absolutely tanked over the last 4 weeks. Colorado has been terrible in Pac-12 play. Utah hasn't been very good, although they've shown some signs of life. And then, like,
Northern
the
Iowa.
Bye games were
Northern
just,
Iowa's
not,
the worst
Northern
one.
Iowa, complete disaster.
Yeah.
Northern Iowa's a complete disaster. Lehigh's been worse than expected. Buffalo's been worse than expected. I mean, so they're not – so. And yet, despite all this, because of the strength of the league, we're into KenPom, 12th overall strength of schedule. Now, that'll go down a little bit because they've gotten three of their six toughest league games out of the way already. But, I mean, the strength of schedule is what it is. But you got to beat somebody, you know? To quote our buddy Paul Daner Jr., you got to win a tilt, right?
You do.
You know, and to quote the great philosopher Marvin Lewis, you know, I see better than I hear. You know, we've talked a lot about this team. National media has talked about this team. Coaching staff, et cetera, talking about how excited they are about this group of guys. But so far, the results have not been there. And I'm not even saying that compared to some arbitrary, you know, self-imposed expectation that this is going to be a top 10 team. I mean, when you and I talked offline, both of us knew that Xavier was not going to be fifth in the country at any point this year, like last year, because the tectonic plates of college basketball have changed. The blue bloods are back to being extremely strong, whereas last year there was a little bit of a power vacuum with a lot of those schools. But I didn't think that come halfway through the season, they would have a resume that looked a lot like the team 2 years ago did, where at this point in the season, the computer ranking numbers were really good, but the resume was pretty blank. And that's kind of where we are again, I feel like, at this point.
That's exactly where we are. Right now, Xavier, in terms of what like actually matters on a resume, Xavier has no statistics. They're 0-0 where it matters. There's no bad losses. There's no wins that really are going to matter. I mean, like you said, two top 50 wins. Well, Utah's going to basically be a top 50 win, too. They're at 51 right now in KenPom,
sure.
And they're close in whatever other metrics. So they're in pretty good shape as well. But you have a couple wins that are okay that'll be look fine, but like no wins that actually matter that are going to bump you up and move you up seed lines or anything like that. So strength – but you mentioned a very important point of this, Dan. Strength of schedule is not going to be a problem for this team at any point. So you can look up at the non-conference and say, oh, that team sucks. That team sucks. Look, that team ended up being terrible. They didn't win any good games. You're right. That's fine. They didn't beat any teams that were very good. But the overall strength of schedule, they didn't play bad bye games. They didn't play any teams in the 300s. Every team they played was a legitimate program, and then they play in a really good conference. So strength of schedule isn't going to hurt them. There's no ding on the resume for not playing good teams early in the year, and they didn't lose any of those games. So there's no negatives from any of that. Basically, the Colorado loss is not good, but it's not something like – it's not an outside-the-top 100 loss that's going to be noticeable. No one's going to point to that and keep them out of something, you know? So no resume at this point. You're absolutely right. It's a blank slate, and they've got to play themselves into it. Now, how should you feel about that if you're a Xavier fan? Totally up to you. Like, I mean – I'm not going to sit here and tell you, yeah, they're going to turn this around at some point. And it's just, you know, it's just a little shooting slump, because at this point in the year, it's more than just a little shooting slump. Like, they're having major issues offensively, and it's multiple guys not being who they're supposed to be. That being said, I personally don't feel confident betting against those guys, like especially Trayvon not hitting threes. I just don't feel comfortable betting that he's going to shoot 32% the rest of the year. And if he returns closer to his percentage, that likely means he hits a hot streak at some point and starts shooting like over 40% for a couple weeks, which means he's going to be really good at some point. I think the point – the question –
in league play, they're shooting – they're shooting 31% for three, which is ninth out of 10 teams in the conference. And for the season, they're at 32.6%, which is 266, so about in the 20th percentile of Division One. I mean, that's just that's really awful.
And Trayvon was a 39% 3-point shooter on almost 200 attempts last year. You know what I mean? Like, it's not it wasn't a fluke season that he put up, and he's been a great shooter ever since I've ever watched him play basketball. So I don't want to bet against them, but I understand if someone else will. Like, that makes sense from what we've seen this year. So I completely understand either side of this. If you don't think this team is going to turn it around and they're not going to be able to beat Cincinnati, they're not going to win at Creighton, they're not going to beat Villanova when they come here, they're going to struggle at Marquette and at Seton Hall, they're going to lose when Butler comes back here. If that's how you feel right now, okay. Like, tough to argue with that with the way they're currently playing. That being said, I think if you also feel, hey, this team has a lot of upside still, they've beaten a lot of average to okay teams despite these struggles happening since the beginning of the year, then I think there's reason to be optimistic as a Xavier fan, too, about what this team can still accomplish. It's just, you're right. We have no way of being able to tell that at this point.
How important for you is this Georgetown game on Sunday?
Big. Really, really big, because this one tells you if it's mental at that point. The last three were legit teams. They were good teams that are going to beat you if you're not on your A game. Georgetown isn't, and you've got them at home. So if the struggles continue to that, then this 0-3 stretch got to them, and now the struggles are bigger than they were before they went into conference play. But if they return to form and beat Georgetown, if they at least look like the team that went up to Georgetown and won at Georgetown, if they put up a similar performance to that, then I say, well, they're the same team they've been all year, which is beating average to good teams, but not teams that are better than them. So this is a really big game on Sunday, I think, in terms of seeing where this team is at. We'll get a good feel for how much of this has invaded their psyche and screwed them up. Are there bigger problems than there were 2 or 3 weeks ago, or are they the same team they've been for most of the year and they just played better competition?
Yeah, Georgetown is 1-5 in league play. They just got absolutely spanked by Providence on their home floor on Monday night. And Georgetown actually played over the course of the last three seasons, although Xavier has really had their number. Georgetown's played really well at Cintas Center in all three of those games. In two of the three, they played really well. I guess they got blown out in the one New Year's Eve night game, but they beat Xavier last year in Cincinnati. And then the previous year, they were up, 18 or 19 points with 12 minutes left before Xavier staged a pretty improbable comeback. So Georgetown's had some success at CentOS Center. Not that really means anything. It's different teams, but
that comeback against Georgetown you referenced is still the longest sustained period I've had in the CentOS Center, where it was absolute, just like a madhouse, like roof coming off the building on a big shot. It was that way for legitimately 10 minutes of game time. It was insane.
Yeah, I mean, they closed the game on a 44-10 run or something like that, and actually were up, I think they won the game by 15 points after being down 19 with 8 minutes left or something crazy like that. I mean, it was just complete downhill running, another epic coaching job by John Thompson, the lesser. So then after that, you have the Crosstown Shootout, and I'm sure we'll probably record before then, but that game once again takes on there's some extra juice to it, I think, from the Xavier side. I would not have believed, if you'd asked me 3 weeks ago, what's the narrative of the Shootout this year? My take would have been, well, both teams are going to make the tournament. Both teams are going to be comfortably in, but this is probably UC's last chance to get a legitimately top drawer win. They're going to be at home. They're going to be super pumped up. You're going to have, Troy Culpain not wanting to be the first 0-4 UC Bearcat in the Crosstown Shootout in history. It would be sort of UC would have more juice in the game, but I don't think that's true at this point. UC looks poised to run the table in the American Conference, and Xavier might be the team that enters that with a little bit of desperation rather than vice versa.
No question. I mean, everyone thought what you said about, Cincinnati needing the game more because of it being their last opportunity for a big win. They haven't had any slip-ups in between when we were saying that and this coming up game. So they're in really good shape, and they don't necessarily need that game, although it really catapults their season into something possibly special if they do get it. And for Xavier, all of a sudden, it's a game they have to have. And it's a game with a lot more pressure than they've played in the last few years, you know, because it is going to matter a whole lot more.
I mean, obviously the parallel that you would draw is the game there 2 years ago, which was a similar situation where Xavier came in with a middling record in Big East play, similar resume with no big wins. I think they had lost. I think they had a bad loss though. Maybe two. Let me look at that. Let me refresh my memory real fast, if you don't mind.
Multiple.
Yeah, that was
losses.
The year they had lost to UTEP and Long Beach and then to Auburn on the road. So they had a number of kind of ugly losses. They also lost to DePaul early in the league schedule. So that was a team that was kind of, you know, they weren't in great shape going to that UC game. And getting that win and then following it up with a big win over Butler the following weekend allowed them to weather some losses down the stretch and make the tournament and then obviously, you know, run to the Big East championship game and then to the Sweet 16. So certainly you would prefer not to see that same narrative play out because I still do think that Xavier is better. That I mean, I've seen Seton Hall and Marquette play a little bit more the last couple of weeks. I don't think either of those teams is that great. I think Xavier should be better than both those teams. Marquette offensively scares you a little bit. They've shown a capacity to score a lot of points. And obviously Seton Hall, Xavier's really struggled with home and away down the years. But you would have to believe that Xavier can get three wins out of those four games. And then if they take care of business at the bottom of the league, it may just be a matter of getting one of those Butler and Villanova games to get yourself to 11 or 12 league wins and be pretty solid shape. But if you start dropping those games, if you drop a game against the bottom of the league, like a game, you know, like an at St. John's or a Georgetown at home, then things are going to get real dicey, both in terms of making sure you're not playing on Wednesday in New York and also making sure that you're in good shape for a at-large bid when the conference tournament start up.
Dan, what we witnessed, I'm assuming what you're looking at KenPom there or something where you're pulling up that schedule from a few years ago to see
yeah.
that. Yeah, what we just witnessed there, you pulling up KenPom, is exactly why this whole, like, on the board, people acting like this team is at rock bottom just cracks me up. Like it's hysterical. If you go like statistically based on bad losses, when all that type of stuff, this is probably, you probably can't find many seasons better than the current Xavier season right now in terms of not having bad losses. I'm serious. Go back and try to find them. Not a whole lot of better seasons, better resumes they put together to January 17th in their history. Not just the last few years, not just the Chris Mack era, just ever. They've always had some bad losses before January 17th, unlike this team. So, like, people, the expectations are just wild to me. I get being frustrated. I get not being happy with where this team is at. I get that the expectations were higher before the year. But, like, you going back there and remembering, oh, yeah, they lost two of the three neutral site games they played that year, and this year's team, you know, won all three of theirs. Despite not playing. That's the thing. I get they haven't played well since the beginning of the season, but this team is still fairly good. Like, they're a pretty decent team.
No, they are.
Without playing well.
There's no question that they are, but I do get, on the other hand, so, like, I get that, like, maybe you would have said, oh, they'll be 14-4, they're 13-5, it's only a game's difference. But I do think there is, and the statistics back that up, but I do think there is a sense, and I definitely get it, and maybe it's, again, maybe it's because expectations are out of whack, but this team's played 725 minutes of basketball this year, right? 18 games, 40 minutes apiece, plus the overtime against Mizzou. And I wonder if you really looked at it, how many of those minutes they played well. Like,
not
like
many.
Just sort of not a whole lot. And so that can either be a good thing or a bad thing, because the good thing is, well, if they put it together, they're going to be dynamite. The bad thing is they played 60% of the regular season. They haven't put it together yet. So how do we know they will?
No question.
And I think that is the real dilemma at this point that I think people are going through.
That's absolutely.
I think some of the reaction has been over the top, but I get it by the same token. I get it.
That's absolutely the dilemma. But my point is that, like, I said something about, you know, this is still one of the better Xavier teams I've covered, just in terms of, like, talent and how, like, how good they are overall, what they've done to this point. And people like thought that was someone thought that was a ridiculous statement. Like this is rock bottom and this team is awful. And it's just like you really like this team would beat that 2011-2012 team 10 out of 10 times. You know what I mean? Like you go back, like they're not losing to Oral Roberts in Hawaii. This team, no matter what, they beat all those teams. This team is just better than a lot of previous Xavier teams, talent-wise. And I get expectations are where they're at, and you're allowed to be more frustrated because of that. But don't lose all sense of what's happened in Xavier history to this point. Like, understand you're playing at a completely different level. You know, this isn't the A-10 anymore either. When people used to be willing to accept back-to-back losses to Charlotte and St. Joe's in a season and call it a good season. Now you do it to three top 10 teams, and it's like world's coming to an end. So you're victims of the moment. Relax a little bit on this stuff. They're not playing well. There's totally reasons to be upset and frustrated and down on this team because of expectations. But don't lose sight of what these kids have accomplished compared to past Xavier teams. They're really good still.
Yeah, I mean, the accomplishment part is a little bit that I think is maybe where the disconnect comes, because like we said, the resume is empty.
But Dan, like I've said, they don't have losses that all these other Xavier teams in the history have had, good Xavier teams that everyone considers good. This team wouldn't lose any of those games because they're better than that. Even while playing terribly, they're better than that.
I guess my thing is that I think this is true of the committee as well, that I care more about who you beat than the occasional bad loss. You know what I mean?
Sure. But those other teams didn't have big wins either to this point. That's what I'm saying. To January 17, to go find me the better resumes. There's three or four of them. Not many. There's not many better resumes that any Xavier teams have put together at this point in the year.
Right. Okay, well, you know, I guess the question then going forward is, what is obviously the bully title is out of reach at this point. I think we would agree. I mean, what is an attainable goal for the remainder of the season from a Xavier perspective?
To be quite honest, because we just don't know where this spin is going to stop, and if it does in terms of the offense and the stars not playing like themselves, I think what you're hoping for as a Xavier fan is you get you're not on the bubble, that you get a like six or seven type seed, and you do enough to do that.
Yeah, that's kind of where I am.
And that you're playing your best basketball by the end of the year. Because this team, granted, sure, you'd much rather have a two or a three or whatever seeding, but this team is good enough that they could be that type of team that gets the 5-7 seed and makes a legitimate run if they are clicking on all cylinders and hitting the potential that we thought they might have in preseason. If they're doing that by the end of the year, then they have a chance to still be special and make a run. So if I'm a Xavier fan, that's what I'd be looking for. More so than worrying about the resume at this point and trying to save a four seed, I'd be like, hey, just figure it out and get on track by the end of the year.
Give me 8 wins. Give me 8 more wins, basically.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's where I am. You know, 8-5 in these last 13, if you assume the losses to UC, so 8-4 in the league, you get to 11-7, I think you're safe on Selection Sunday, especially because that's probably going to mean that you're going to pick up a big win somewhere along the way.
Yep.
That I think gets you to that position of safety. And I think if you win 11 games in the league, you're definitely going to be, you know, the third or the fourth seed in the Big East tournament, which means you'll get a favorable matchup in the first round. Maybe you pick up another win in New York. And the thing is that if Xavier can somehow get to a third seed, a semi against Butler, I think they can beat Butler. I really do. I think that
they
played well enough at Hinkle. You know, for the first 20 minutes of the game, they played really good defense. They got scorched in the second half. I realize that they lost focus for periods of time. But I think on a neutral venue, outside of that atmosphere, outside of that, let's say, refereeing crew that was susceptible to certain how should we put this, behaviors, which I don't approve of on the basketball court, that maybe they could have, you know, they could have put the stop to that. But, you know, there's things they got to clean up, as you know. I mean, they got to put a stop to the turnovers. They've got to find a way, and I know that it's the whitest complaint in the world, but you got to make more foul shots in some of these games, especially at key times. And I know that the percentage isn't bad overall, but some of the misses against Creighton and Butler were backbreaking. And the bad thing about it is it's not the guys that you would expect to go up there and clunk free throws. It's the three guards that are going up there and missing foul shots at critical times.
Right.
So it's like you got to clean some of that up, and you got to hit a shot. You got to hit a big shot here or there if you're going to win those games. And that's what this season's going to come down to. I mean, last year Xavier played I think, a total of three games that were decided by 5 points or less. And one of those was the Creighton home game, which was really Creighton hitting 1,000 threes in the last minute to close within five. The other two were the Seton Hall game, where Xavier was down 20 and hit 1,000,000 threes to get it to five. Really the only close game they played all year was the Wisconsin game. They don't have a lot of reps in those scenarios, so it probably shouldn't be a surprise they struggled a little bit this year. But they got to win some of those games, and I think that's where this is going to come down to over the next 2 months.
Dan, let me remind people of something real quick. Go back 2014-15 season. Xavier lost on Valentine's Day at home to St. John's, 78-70, right? They were 7-7 in league play at that time, 16-10 overall. Three games later, they went to St. John's, lose 58-57, 18-11 overall, 8-8 in league play. Then they had Villanova and at Creighton left. They lose to Villanova at home. Fire Chris Mack on the message boards. The season's over. This team stinks. Mack's never going to be able to win. They're 8-9 in the league. The Big East is too good for him. Can't recruit this level. All of that. They go to Creighton. They pull off a 74-73 win with their backs against the wall. Then they go. And by the way, they were out of the tournament after they lost to Villanova. Everyone told me. I said, I think they're at least an 11 seed or probably even a 10. They're out of the tournament. No chance. Out of the tournament. Go to the Big East Conference tournament. Beat Butler in overtime. Beat Georgetown, lose to Villanova 69-52 in the finals. You know what seed they ended up with that year?
That was a six.
A six seed. 21-13. They went 9-9 in the conference. They end up with a six seed because they won at Creighton at home. And Creighton was 79 in KenPom. Like, not a top 20 Creighton team. Not a great Creighton team. Okay. So this resume wasn't super impressive. Their best win in league play was at Georgetown. 22 in KenPom that year. They weren't world beaters. They went to the Big East tournament, made some way. Like, this conference matters. You can still increase your seed line in the last few weeks of the season. So you get back on track. There's still plenty of time to get where you want to be, whether that's, you know, 6, 5, 6, 7, 4, whatever. All that's still in front of them. There's plenty to play still for. They still have plenty of time. It's just a matter of will it click at some point or not. That's what it comes down to, and aside from them making shots, I don't really know if there's many adjustments they can make. If I can get something off my chest real quick about the Creighton game that we kind of skipped over and it's been brought up on the board, people were asking why they switched everything in that game. We're worried about the defense, which I don't know why you're worried about the defense considering they did really well against a really good offensive team. I understand point guard wasn't there. I hear you. Still a good offensive team. Here's why they switched everything, okay? Creighton has about 155 sets to run against teams who jump ball screens, to exploit you jumping ball screens, hard hedging those ball screens like Xavier does with your bigs. They're really good at it, if you haven't noticed in the past. Xavier had a one-day turnaround to prepare for that. Okay? So instead of trying to figure out how they tell their kids, hey, watch this action, watch that action, they're going to run all these sets at you, they decided, why don't we switch everything? Do you know how many times that cost them, where they had a mismatch with a big on a guard or a guard on the big, and Creighton ended up scoring? You know how many times that cost them in the game?
I can think of one.
Yeah, it cost them twice.
I think.
Yeah, it cost them twice. You know how many times Xavier typically gets beat in ball screens because they're out hard hedging in a game? How many times? Like, I mean, honestly.
Like, I would say eight.
Right, that's like the majority of times people score is somehow they figure out a way to beat Xavier's ball screen defense, right? Well, it cost them twice.
I know there was one, and one of those situations was Miles Davis just getting his doors blown off, which Maybe we, you know what, let's hit on that too before we're done here. Give me a fact or fiction about this. I mean, where do you stand on the usage of Davis at this point?
I'm sorry.
Because, okay, so first of all, it puts the lie to all the garbage being spewed about how Xavier conveniently brought him back at this point. This is the worst possible time to bring him back because every minute you put him out there to reacclimate himself to the pace of play, you're playing 5-on-4. And you're playing great teams right now.
Yeah.
So I understand why he's got to do it. But it has been rough to watch, particularly in the Butler game. He just looked so far off the pace. Against Villanova, I mean, that was 25 minutes of – well, that's an exaggeration. That 13. Was 18 minutes of garbage time.
Yeah.
I mean, it was an AAU game. It was a YMCA game. You know, a guy can waddle up and down the court for right. 10 minutes in a game like that. But against Butler and Creighton, I mean, he was just – Creighton, he wasn't quite as bad defensively as he was against Butler. I think it's Creighton maybe, you know, maybe Xavier was able to hide him a little bit more. But, my goodness, I mean, he really looks off the pace, more so than I expected. I will never discount how much of an effect that kind of layoff can have again, because it's stark. He doesn't look like the same guy.
No, and it's not a surprise at all to me. I said, you know, and I mean, I think my thoughts were pretty clearly out there on the Skinny podcast when they announced that he was coming back, when Brendel tried to bring up that point that you made about it was convenient timing for him to be coming back. So I don't feel the need to rehash that.
Is that the podcast where Skinner talks about what foods give him gas?
I think that might be a different one. I think that might be the Two Angry Guys.
Yeah, he's putting out a lot of content recently, a lot of which I've been listening to. I think it's gotten to a point where I get too much Richard Skinner in my life. I may need to dial that back. No offense.
No, none taken. I think that's something we all need to take in moderation in our lives. With Miles Davis, I don't think – I wouldn't have played him as much as they have. I totally understand why they feel the need to. And maybe they just felt like some – there's no way you could have felt like the Creighton game was a lost cause. So that's not why they were doing it. I guess they feel more confident him than they do in Quentin Gooden right now at this point, which
was
– doesn't say.
Which was weird, man. That was weird. He starts Quentin, plays him the first 4 minutes of the game. Quentin wasn't terrible.
I thought he was good.
And then he gets like 40 seconds more of playing time the rest of the game.
Yeah.
That was really strange. I don't think there's been any kind of explanation about it.
No, and I don't think we're going to get one. It's his team. Well, it's probably going to play them the minutes he thinks they deserve. But now going forward, I think this thing totally changes. I think Miles does get implemented back and starts recalibrating his shot at some point. This isn't even close to – that wasn't a functional Miles Davis, but I told everyone he wasn't going to be a factor in those three games. There was zero chance of that happening. Now, could he have made two or three threes throughout that time? Absolutely. Totally could have seen that happening, him making some shots. But he wasn't going to be able to defend. He wasn't going to look good or fluid or in shape or anything like that. It's going to be a few weeks. It will. I promise. Now, by the end of the season, will he be close to the same guy he was last year? No idea. But I think there's a chance of it now. Like, I don't think because he was terrible these first few games means he's not going to be worth anything the rest of the year.
Right. And I think the equation that's out there, the sort of like scales that you have to balance, is how much of a haircut can you take over the next 2 weeks in reintegrating him into the game and getting him 10 to 12 minutes or whatever it's going to be, knowing that he's not going to be real productive. Or not at least being able to count on production versus what the potential benefit is of getting him this game time now down the road. And there's really no way to calibrate that. It's kind of going to be a gamble. You know, if Chris wanted to, and I think it'd be within his right to say, look, this just is not going to work. I'm just going to use Quentin. I'm going to play the same rotation I was playing before Miles came back. I'll fit him in here and there, but he's not going to be an integral part of the team going forward. Chris could have decided that. I mean, he could have made that decision. That's not the decision he's made because he's seen Miles. I think he feels like he owes Miles the chance to get back into the game, which I think is fair.
More importantly,
and he knows what he's capable of.
Yeah.
And what he's capable of contributing.
I think it has a whole lot more to do with the fact, like, Dan, to be honest, I don't think, I mean, based on what we just saw in the last three games, I don't think Chris and his staff feel they're taking a huge risk or taking a huge haircut, as you put it, by playing Miles. Because basically what they've done is they've eaten in a lot of Quentin's minutes. So, and clear, like, if you're putting Miles in those games, especially the Creighton one, where you clearly felt it was a must win at your place, you know, got to get that one done, and you had chances to do so. If you're playing Miles in those minutes, you clearly thought he was your better option. So they don't, I don't think they feel they have a better option for those backup guard minutes. And I don't think they're playing Miles over JP or Edmund or anything at this point. I think he's still clearly backup to those guys. So right now, I think they just kind of think he's the backup guard, and they feel like he's their best option either way, is the message I took from those three games. So you're right. Like, that is what they'll have to weigh, is how much can they get him on the court going forward. But I don't think it's going to come at the cost of the starters. So if he's only playing the backup minutes, then I don't think they feel there's a huge drop off between him and Quentin right now. In fact, I think they feel Miles is probably the better option.
Okay. Well, I want to throw one thing out there before we finish. It's going to take me a second. So I'm filling time now.
Okay.
I'm just filling time. The first full season that we did this show, there was a point where we recorded a podcast, and it was the first week of January of 2013, and it was off a stretch where Xavier had lost to UC 60-45. They had lost at home to Wofford 56-55, lost at Tennessee 51-47, and lost at a terrible Wake Forest team 66-59. So it could always be worse. And this is in the grand scheme of things, it ain't that bad.
And that was before getting ready to go play in the A-10.
Yep, and there's a lot left to play for this season. And the Muskies have plenty of chances to fill up that resume just the same way they did 2 years ago. So,
yep. To me, like,
we'll leave it there.
To me, I understand why people get frustrated, but this is the fun. Like, this isn't college football. Your season doesn't end after a loss. You're not fans of Kentucky or Duke, where every season is championship or bust. You've never won a championship. So the beauty of it is seeing your team, the teams that grow and the way they mold and who plays their best at the end and how they got there and what the coaches were able to figure out and what the players were able to do and who stepped up down the line. That's what made those seasons in past Xavier history fun. They figured it out, and then they were able to make a run. This team has the opportunity to do that. No telling if they will. But this is the fun part, guys. If you can't enjoy this, I don't know why you like sports all that much. But anyways, I think that does it for the Dayton Victory podcast. For Dan, I'm Rick. Thanks for listening, everyone.